believe God has raised up a remnant established in the truth, resisting this apostasy. There are men and women all across this country determined to stand for the truth. There is a spirit of compromise. Unity in doctrinal diversity. Ed Harrell wrote in the Christianity Magazine, May of 1990. It was actually a 17-part series of articles. But he said Romans 14 could explain why brethren are allowed to tolerate contradictory teachings and practices on important moral and doctrinal questions. What he was saying is this. Homer Haley has taught false doctrine, but we can have fellowship anyway. He wasn't saying this is in the area of personal scruples. He was admitting this is open, flagrant, false doctrine, but we can have fellowship anyway. Now that is the spirit of compromise. But we are in the period now. This has all been unfolding about 20 years, and that's about how much time it takes till in the cycle of these things, you enter the time of the danger of an overreaction. That's where we are. And so all of us are having to think through some things. Some are wanting to band in these areas of growth and of conscientious scruples. Some are speaking out very loudly on it, but not pressing to the point of division. Some are challenging for debates on it. They're very insistent that they've got the truth, the absolute truth, the final truth on all of those points of details. And they, in some cases, are saying, if you don't go with us on this, we can't worship with you. We'll cancel your gospel meeting. I've had two or three meetings canceled by brethren who had this reaction. And that if I worship there, I can't put my money in the collection because I'm really thinking about leaving. I mean, you've got that whole ferment working across the country. It's not just in Tacoma. You're not going through some isolated experience here. Brethren are struggling with this across the country. And if we could step back and realize, yeah, that's the pattern these cycles follow. And we want to guard and keep our balance as this all unfolds. Some are saying, I'm alarmed about the danger of liberalism on marriage and divorce, and I'll tell you how to stop that. There is no divorce for any cause. And I've attended a debate where brethren have taken that position. And I want to say I can worship with the brethren that take that position if they won't divide us over it. My conscience differs strongly from them on that. But if they won't divide us over it, I will bear with that. Some are saying no divorce unless you have witnesses to the actual act of fornication. I have a tape where some brethren are trying to establish that view. And again, before you make fun of that, it seems to me a little bit odd or almost silly to think that you could have witnesses. People don't lie down on a bed and call in witnesses. But here again, I want to put this in the proper perspective. These are men seriously committed to the same truth that I am committed to. I want you to get that point. They believe you have a right to marry if you were never married, or if your mate died, or you put your mate away for fornication. So what are we talking about? Some details in the area of application and how to implement what we believe. That's where that difference comes in. And I'm not going to fight those men. And I'm not going to ask for their meetings to be canceled. And I'm not going to be separated from these men. And some are saying the innocent mate must initiate the civil divorce. That if you don't do that, then you believe in a waiting game, or you believe in a mental divorce, and whoever marries a put-away person commits adultery. They think they have arguments that, in their mind, are very weighty on this. I do not share that view, but I'm not going to fight over this either and talk about canceling meetings and all such things. Innocent mate must countersue if the guilty party, meaning the fornicator, initiates a lawsuit. The only way she could have a right to remarry is she must take the legal action of a countersuit. Then you cannot reconcile after a divorce for fornication. Why not? Because whoever marries a put-away person commits adultery. That's their understanding of that passage. And then a divorced fornicator cannot remarry after the first mate dies. Why? Because whoever marries a put-away person commits adultery. And so some are struggling. In their mind, that has almost become a principle. Just like one man for one woman for life. In their mind, this has grown to the proportion that that is also a principle. I believe that statement has a context, and that you have to back up and get into the context to follow through what it really meant. But again, I'm not going to divide if they hold that in their conscience ever so strongly, but will not create a faction. I'm going to have fellowship with those brethren. If the prospective fornicator gets the divorce paper and then commits the adultery, the faithful mate is not to remarry. This one also has been a point of friction and irritation with brethren that I'm very close to and that I work with. One of the things that has hit me like a hammer in recent months is we're arguing over something that's mostly theoretical. I cannot with any certainty point out a case where this has ever happened. Can you? I don't think it's happened here. And I'm not trying to say by that it's not worthy of some discussion and study. All right, if we differ on it, let's see if we can get closer together. Let's study. But don't be wrapped up in this one point, obsessed with this point. I'm going to drive and push and press, and either everybody's lining up or you are in apostasy and I'm leaving. Don't let that happen. Don't let that happen. The brethren who are discussing these and several more points I could list all affirm you have a right to marry if you were never married. You have a right to marry if your mate died. You have a right to marry if you put your mate away for fornication. These subjects involve how to implement those principles. Now, somebody's right and somebody's wrong on every one if you wanted to argue down the list. But I'm not going to be the arbiter of that. I'm going to leave that in the conscience of each one to decide. And sometimes I might be wrong on how I understand a principle, and yet there was no sin committed. And sometimes I might be wrong on the application of a principle in a way that could lead me into error, but because brethren were forbearing with me, and from time to time, not as an obsession, that we were able to discuss it, that I gradually came to see the light on that. But you cut me off immediately and push me out the other direction. How does that help us? And so, yes, I'm going to be forbearing on these things. And I'm not going to be a part of a faction and demanding that we cancel each other's meetings and all of those kinds of reactions. I believe they are overreactions, but I say again, I'm not making light of anyone who holds any of these views. I respect the fact that this is someone who is seriously trying to go to heaven. But I do believe Brother Summers' statement that we read is very applicable. The deeper we go into all trying to explain whys and wherefores of why I hold that view and you're wrong and I'm wrong, and the brethren are sitting there thinking, I am confused. But when you teach, if you've never been married, you have a right to marry. If your mate dies, you have a right to marry. If you put your mate away for fornication, you have a right to marry. Brethren are not confused. They understand exactly what that's all about. There will be no division if we can study these matters within the context of the Christian's growth and of developing judgments and understanding that some areas of it perhaps involves my personal scruples. These things have now been discussed for at least 20 years. If there is some raging apostasy centered around one of those points, I confess that I can't find it. In fact, men who differ on those things are some of the strongest men that I personally know in speaking out against the apostasy rather than following it. Men like Brett Hoagland and Harry Osborne, who has been more outspoken than these men? Who has put their neck on the line to defend the truth and oppose the apostasy? I don't know who they are. And yet they differ on some of these areas that I have listed, and I hold different views of some of these areas. But there's no apostasy there. We've got to guard against the danger of overreacting. Study in a helpful way without making charges and countercharges, without fighting and biting and forming ourselves into factions. Brother Weldon Warnock and Brother Jim Deason discussed one of these subjects in searching the Scriptures, and yet did not press their view to division. Brother Warnock did not say, "I cannot worship with you, Jim Deason." Jim Deason did not say, "I cannot worship with you." That's the kind of spirit that can happen if we allow it to happen, that we discuss it when it comes up, and then we can move on to other things. There has been some friction about this matter. Some have declared war. Some are obsessed day and night. One preacher said, "I spend 80% of my time studying one or two of these points." He got up and said that publicly. Some have demanded and pressed for debates. "You're going to debate this, debate this, debate this." Some have canceled meetings. Some are pressing that there must be a division. And if we can only look back in the history of our brethren and realize all of those divisions that came as overreaction after the apostasy of the Christian church movement, I don't want to go through that experience again in our time, so that we create 1,000 splinters among ourselves. I don't think you want to see that happen either. And so again, it's the same cycle working itself out in the same way that it always did. I hope that God will help us not to follow the line of apostasy. I hope God will help us not to follow or fall into the danger of overreaction. I hope God will help us to set our hearts on the principles of unchanging truth, and yet that we can recognize to each other and to ourselves, yes, we will grow in some areas of knowledge. There are judgments involved, Philippians 1, and I have to grow in that area. There are personal scruples that may also be involved. That is the context in which I approach these matters. My preaching has consistently been that if you've never been married, you have a right to marry. If your mate dies, you have a right to marry. If you put your mate away for fornication, you have a right to marry. I cannot settle all of the side issues or questions that might come up as to how to implement those things. But I do believe those things are absolute, unchanging principles of truth. You've been very patient, taken a little time to set this before you. But I have prayed about it and tried to bring something that will help you and not harm you. I might suggest, since I've noticed some needed to go to the restroom, we ought to take maybe just a 5-minute break and then come back and open it up. Okay. Oh, you got a time limit?